This is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca, episode number 46, How to Get Your Dog to Poo and Pee on Command, well, sort of. Hey there, pet lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 46th Pet Podcast on Pets.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, we have an interview with Elizabeth of Tenderfoot Training, and she's going to let us know how we can train our dogs to poo and pee where we want them to, as opposed to where they want to. And it's a really challenging situation, and unfortunately, a lot of people bring their pets back to shelters because of this condition, and it's really quite treatable. If you notice, I have a bit of a scratchy voice, but the interview we did with Elizabeth was done a few days back when my voice was decent, so it's not going to sound like this for the whole podcast. I'd like to thank people that sent me emails and posted on the bulletin board about our last podcast with Dr. Lee, where we talked about holiday hazards. As always, comments and input is so appreciated. If you've been lurking around our forum, our pet forum, you may want to join. We have a really, really great forum. There's so many dedicated animal lovers there that if you've been lurking, you may want to just sign up. It's free. Say hi. We have so many good things going on there. There's pet videos and there's pics, pet pictures. Our members are addicted to pet pictures. So, you know, if you've been lurking, why not join? Come on in. It's free and we're all pretty friendly. We recently put out our new newsletter, and if you want to receive it, it's of course free. All you have to do is add your name and your email into the yellow nav bar on most pages on pets.ca, and then every time we put one out, it comes to your email box automatically. We never spam, we never trade, sell, rent, or do anything else that's despicable with your email addresses, and if for whatever reason you want to unsubscribe, you can successfully unsubscribe at any time. Okay then, so let's just get right into the topic of the day, how to get your dog to poo and pee on command, sort of. Let's get right into that interview with Elizabeth now. So I'd like to welcome back Elizabeth Simpson from TenderfootTraining.com. Elizabeth and Doug have been our experts for a couple of years now, and every once in a while they come on our podcast and share the benefit of their great information. And today we've got some good information all about pooping and peeing and where to do it and how to get your dogs to do it. But before we get into it, welcome back, Elizabeth. Glad to have you back on our podcast.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having us.
Ah, such a pleasure, such a pleasure. So I wanted to talk about this today. It's not the most glamorous subject, but it does seem to be a popular source of misery for pet owners. Is it possible to teach our pets to poop and pee on command?
It is. It's possible to get your dog to attempt to soil on command. Peeing is much easier. Sometimes my dog will even lift his leg and fake it, just to show me that he's trying. To get anybody to poo on command can be a much tougher call. I mean, really think about it. That's a hard one to manufacture. So it's, we can definitely have them do it at certain places. You can definitely learn their rhythms and schedules so that you know how to time it so that you can be more successful. Pooing on command, though, can be a harder one to pull off, but peeing on command is definitely doable.
Okay, and I guess when I meant like pooing on command, it was more like what you said. I mean, it's morning time. Most dogs, many humans, have to go and do their business in the morning. So we take them out. We want them to poo. We know they have to poo because they've been pooing, you know, since they were born. We know we know they have to go, but sometimes they don't want to go. They choose not to go, even though they have to go. So I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at. How to encourage our pets to go when we know they need to go.
Okay. So if an animal is reluctant to go, it might be that somewhere along in the training that we screwed up. We made a mistake. We maybe got too mad at them for soiling in the house. So then they thought, oh, she just doesn't want me to soil at all in front of her. So some dogs, actually, it's ridiculous, but people have noticed that their dog won't soil outside until the person turns their back. And the dog is actually thinking, I don't want my person to see me because it upsets them, so I'll wait for them to turn their back. So that means that we made a mistake in our original training process. So when you get upset with your dog for soiling in the house, you want to make sure that you're not flipping out on them, that you just create enough energy so that they feel, wow, I don't think mom liked that. But not so much that, oh, I am never doing that in front of her again.
Because what they're doing is they're taking the cues that they've learned indoors, they're bringing it outdoors, and they're making assumptions.
Yes, and that's a huge mistake that people make, because they'll get angry at the dog for soiling in the house and toss him out in the backyard and go back and clean the spot that just got dirty. But basically what they just did was teach the dog, I don't want to see you soil. And so they put the dog outside, they soiled outside, there were no repercussions, pro or con. So the dog thinks, oh, okay, well, the person just doesn't want to see me do that. So then they learn to literally go behind the couch or down the hallway or in the back bedroom or downstairs. And so it really doesn't become about inside and outside. It just becomes about whether the human should see me or not.
Okay, it's so interesting how that works. All they have to do is read one key, because ultimately, as we've said many, many times before, dogs want to please us. If they see that we're displeased and they think that their poo is causing us displeasure, then they're going to have issues around pooing.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And we've had clients that have called and said, my dog has not pooed for days. and it was not because the dog was sick, but something was wrong within the relationship. The dog was afraid to soil in front of the person.
Before we get into like solving this, can you give us a few facts about how often they should go, when they typically need to go? Are there some guidelines that we need to be aware of so that we can make good choices when we want to teach these types of routines to our dogs?
Okay. First and foremost, a very primal fact is that a meal goes in and a meal needs to come out.
Right.
So typically, though, depending on the kind of food that you're feeding, say you're feeding a kibble, which is that hard, crunchy stuff you scoop out of a bag.
Yep.
Well, kibbles typically expand inside their system, and they're filled with filler, literally, that doesn't get absorbed into the dog's body. So very often you put in one or two cups of food into the dog, and you notice that 2 to 4 cups are coming out. And it's like, wow, how did that happen? And it's because the food expanded and the dog did not absorb very much of it. So very often, especially a younger dog under an age 2 or under age 1, you'll notice that they need to poo twice. They're not done just because they pooed once. They need to poo twice. So too many people assume, oh, my dog just potted, so now we can go back in the house. Well, he wasn't done yet. And then a mistake is made, and then we get all upset. So give him ample opportunity to finish what he's doing. Make sure that you know the rhythms of your dog. And then also you need to know, just like with humans, when we're done with a meal, about how quickly do we have to go to the bathroom. So with some dogs, especially puppies, they typically have to soil within 5 to 10, maybe 15 minutes. And so you can time things really well. As they get older, they can usually hold it longer because they know how to hold it. A puppy doesn't really know how to hold it yet. And so so you'll just learn, oh, this particular dog, oh, he always goes, exactly 20 minutes after he eats his meal. And you'll just learn those things. Or you'll say, he doesn't go until we've walked for 15 minutes, because walking will actually elicit the desire to go.
Okay, and just let me interrupt you for one half sec, just for people that have a new puppy right now and don't have experience with this. When we're talking about 15 or 20 minutes after they've eaten, we're talking about they are producing a bowel movement of the food that they have just eaten 20 minutes after they've eaten it?
No. You put in one meal, and that meal pushes out the previous meal.
Okay, that's what I thought, and I just wanted to clarify. Okay, good.
And also, and that leads me into another good thought, is that too many people leave food down for their dog all day long. They put 2 cups in, just put it on the kitchen floor, and they walk away. And the dog learns to become a picky eater very often. So they'll come and get a couple bites, come back half an hour, get a couple bites. And what they're doing is they're constantly putting in little meals. So throughout the day, they're constantly wanting to push out the previous little meal. So instead of just creating a nice structure around eating, they've actually created a house training nightmare, because the dog always has to soil.
Which is why probably, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you're likely to recommend to your own clients, let's say 1 or 2 or 3 meals per day, no snacks, leave the bowl down for X amount of minutes, and if they haven't finished it, you take it away, and they learn real quick that they have to finish that meal quickly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And the magic number is typically 10 minutes. If the food is not gone in 10 minutes, that dog's not hungry enough. Okay?
Let's backtrack 4 minutes into the conversation,
okay,
where you were talking about fillers and the fact that dogs may have to go more than once based on the meal. Is it directly related to the quality of the food? A higher quality food, maybe slightly more expensive, that has less filler may cause the dog the need to move its bowels less often?
Yes.
Okay.
And the most beautiful bowel movement you've ever seen is, such a thing, is from a dog who's on raw diet. Because if you think about it, if raw diet is basically, and this is kind of gross, but like you put a rabbit in a blender, you get the bone, you get the meat, you get the organ meat, you get some stomach contents, you get everything. And just like you would see, if you're in a rural area, a coyote scat on the trail, it is usually white and crumbly, and it doesn't really look like a dog stool. So a dog that's eating raw diet, they're absorbing so much out of that food, and there is no filler. They're absorbing calcium and all the protein and digesting as much of it as they can, so that what comes out the other end is a beautiful thing to behold. It's typically white because they've just passed through most of the calcium that they didn't digest, so it's white. And it's crumbly because, again, it's hard calcium. It does not smell. You really don't even need to pick it up. You kind of, if you just thought about it, you could kick it and it just crumbles into the ground. It becomes part of the earth again instead of the large, nasty ones that you would never want to step in. So the better the diet, the better the stool.
Okay. And, you know, raw diets, there's debate over raw diets. But regardless of whether you're a proponent of a raw diet or not, a high-quality food that's closer to a raw diet is going to have less filler than a very cheap food. And thus the stools will be more akin to a wild coyote's stool than a big, messy stool from a cheap food.
Right.
Okay, good. Okay, then, so let's move forward. And I know this is a common problem as well, and maybe you can address this issue and what you think about it. You know your dog has to go because of experience. You bring your dog outside, and it doesn't poop. And then when it comes inside, it poops in your house and freaks the heck out of you.
Yeah, we actually had a client that was ready to euthanize her little puppy. She was so frustrated. And I was like, no. We can fix this. And the next time I talked to her a few days later, it was already fixed.
It's so sad. Like, actually, I know it's one of the most common reason, if not the most common reason, why pets are brought back to shelters to begin with.
Right.
It's because they cannot get a handle on elimination, be it poo or pee or both, and it just freaks them out. And they're like, oh, I can't deal with this, so I'm bringing it to the shelter. But these are most often, they're easily treatable, aren't they? Especially once we realize if there's a medical issue, that's another story. We have to deal with the medical issue. But if there's no medical issue, this is simple stuff to cure, isn't it?
It is. It just takes patience and consistency. And you can't expect some puppies, you tell them no once, they never soil the house again. Well, that's the rare exception. And it's the person's responsibility to create an environment and create structure for success. So if your puppy it's been 3 weeks and he's not seeming to make any progress, well, it's not his fault. It's our fault. We need to look at what we're doing and what we need to change. I kind of put it into people's head that if you had a toddler in the house that was not potty trained and he was running around the house naked 24/7, you would be watching him like a hawk. You would not leave his side. Okay. Well, that's basically what we have when we have a puppy in the house, is we have a naked toddler running around who's not potty trained, and they're going to go everywhere.
Yeah.
But people just assume, oh, dogs get house trained by some miracle. And no, it takes consistency and persistency, which means that you have to get them out regularly. You have to allow them to even make a mistake sometimes so that you can correct it. Because to a dog, your house is one big territory. It's not a den. And people get the assumption that, well, it's his home. He shouldn't soil it. No, it's his territory. But you have to step up to the plate and say, this is my territory. You don't soil my territory. And you can soil the outside territory, which means you have to catch them in the act. Don't freak out on them, but you definitely have to let them know that was a bad decision. And but they have to physically be doing the soiling when you correct them. And then they'll look at you. Hopefully the little sphincter will pull up. And then you have to get happy and get them outside and go with them and stay with them until they soil again, and then have what we call a potty party.
Right.
And reward them.
And the potty party is lavish praise, maybe with treats, getting real excited and positive, but not hyper. and exactly. and really giving your dog some positive reinforcement.
Yes, and using a word. Say, go pee, go poo, do your business, go potty, whatever it is. Start to give it a word of association so that every time you go outside and you just say, okay, let's go potty, they at least try.
Okay.
So it's not, let's go out and play for 15 minutes. And that can be a problem with puppies, too, is puppies get so excited about going outside that they forget that they had to potty, and just like little kids get distracted. And then we stay out with them for 10 or 15 minutes, they don't potty, we think, okay, they don't have to go, we bring them inside, we let them loose in the house, we forget about them, and then they go, oh, that's right, I had to potty, I'll do it inside. And then it's all this vicious circle, we all get frustrated. So allow them enough time to remember they had to potty.
And before we get into actually, you know, imagining us and our dog outside, and hopefully you'll give us some tips, but is there consistency, or should there be consistency with regard to who takes the dog out? Let's say I take the dog out, and then my wife takes the dog out, and then one of our kids takes the dog out. Is that good? Should the dog get used to different people taking it out, and should it get used to producing what it needs to produce, regardless who takes it out, if it's consistent at the same time, etc.?
Yeah. I mean, just whoever takes it out, it shouldn't matter.
Okay.
It really shouldn't. It's just, you know, everybody has their individual relationship. Don't ask maybe a six-year-old to have the understanding and wherewithal that
right.
an adult's going to have when they take the dog out. But just so long as he's getting out and he's having positive experiences, and when he's in the house, he's either managed in a crate or in an X-pen or tied to us by a leash, or we're able to watch him somehow. It's really as important as it is about getting him out frequently, it's important to watch him inside, because if they make a mistake behind the couch, say, and they relieve themselves, it immediately feels good to empty your bowels. So they're immediately physically rewarded. And if nobody caught them and said, oh, that was a bad idea, then they think, oh, well, nobody seems to mind me going here. So watching them in the house is so important.
Right. And just to backtrack again 10 seconds, I know we said it, I want to say it again.
Okay.
When you catch, if you haven't caught your pet, you can't punish your pet. If you see the pee or the poo 5 minutes after it's done, never mind 5 hours, 5 minutes. It's
5 seconds.
5 seconds even. Excellent. Thank you for correcting me.
If they're walking away from the soiling, it's too late.
Okay.
Because if you get mad at them, what is the association? You're walking away from pee or you're walking away from poo. That's the association. They don't take responsibility for having put it there. You have to catch them in the act of relieving themselves in order to correct it. And you have to catch them in the act of relieving themselves outside in order to praise it.
Right. Because if you don't do it at the right timing, you're sending mixed signals. They're absorbing.
Okay, I haven't got a clue. They just think.
They're absorbing mixed signals.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And they get frustrated, I guess, too, because they probably don't understand what the heck, why you're so mad at them. All they're doing is walking away from poo. Why is that worth so much anger?
Exactly. And then you become an untrustworthy leader because you're freaking out for reasons they don't understand. It causes them to then become insecure dogs, potentially, and because there is no clear message. There's no, you know, cognition. There's no aha moment of, oh, every time I'm pooing on the carpet, he gets mad. But instead, it's when I walk away from poo. Okay, so I shouldn't walk away from poo? What's that about? So it gets confusing.
Okay, cool. I think we've set up a good foundation. Let's bring our imaginary dog outdoors.
Okay.
And let's talk about how to get our imaginary dog outdoors to pee and to poop, provided that we were already keeping their feeding and or drinking schedules consistent.
Okay.
So how do we do it? You know, we're rookies at this. We kind of, you know, they've soiled a few times in the house. We're learning what to do, and we want to bring them outside, and we want them to produce something in a certain area.
Yeah.
What's the procedure? What are good tips on having them just do it to begin with?
Okay. So if there are areas where other dogs have soiled, like maybe you have another dog or you're in an apartment complex and you have to go to a little park area or something where other dogs have soiled, without, especially for a puppy, you don't want them to be sniffing other dogs' poos because there's a potential transmission of disease. But you can go to that general area and smelling where other dogs have gone or where they have gone in the past will elicit the desire to go again. So that's just a physiological thing that happens. Having them on the leash can be very good because what you do is you go outside and you literally stand still like a tree, like a dog is tied to a tree, except you're the tree. And your hand is, again, literally locked down. That tree is not moving one inch. and your puppy or dog needs to just sniff around you in whatever circumference the length of the leash creates. And they just need to be in that place until they do something. And then you can move on and go someplace else. But the problem is that we take a puppy out or a new dog out and on the leash, and they pull us from one location to another, having us convinced that they need to sniff 16,000 places before they'd pick just the perfect spot to soil. And what have they done? All kinds of wrong things. One is they've taken way too long to get down to business, and they've pulled you everywhere you want to go, so that is a whole other training issue, but they've just taught your dog to become a really good puller. And they aren't listening to your suggestion. They're just kind of doing what they want until they decide they want to do it. But instead, if you kind of make it, nope, we're doing business right now. We're going to stay stationary, and you're going to hang with me until I see you do something, and then we can move. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. Something that just came to mind, and you can suggest whether it's a good idea or not. I know when it comes to young puppies and trying to convince them to do what they need to do, some people will use puppy pads and artificial type things to get them to urinate and or defecate. Do you suggest using any of these aids?
The only time I really think those are valid is if you live on the 40th floor of an apartment building and you have a little dog that is probably going to be living in the apartment most of its life, or you are infirm in some manner, shape, or form that it's very difficult for you to get your dog out quickly. If you teach them to go inside on a pad or on paper, you're going to have to train them twice. They're always learning how to go inside, and that's not okay. So you better to just train the first time and teach them to go outside on grass or whatever substrate is out there. I'm not a big fan of the potty pads or the litter systems, but they can be a godsend for certain people.
Okay, good to know, good to know. Back to the little barker who's on the leash, and now you have that leash tied to your body so that you're not moving much. You're trying to encourage that dog to go. Is it going to go? Is it likely to go? What's your experience? You're waiting for it to go. You're waiting to lavish all this praise upon the dog. If you follow your own advice, how often do they produce something?
Again, everybody's an individual. Okay,
yep.
So patience is the key. You will learn what your dog's typical habits are. Oh, he pees the minute I get outside. Or it takes him a few minutes. But everybody's an individual. So patience is huge. If you are out there for 5 minutes standing still and absolutely nothing has happened, then probably they don't have to go.
Okay.
So either I'm going to go back in the house with my puppy, because we were only coming out to go potty in the first place. So I'm going to come back in the house, and I'm going to either have my puppy tied to me again, so wherever I go, the puppy is, and I will notice changes when they start to act like they have to soil, so I can take that as an opportunity, either correct it or go ahead and get them outside and try again, or they're going to go in their crate where they're less likely to soil, or in an X pen where that's not going to freak me out if they make a mistake, but I have to continue to keep an eye on them and then give them another opportunity in about 15 minutes if this is a puppy that we're talking about. If it's a dog that we're going for a walk, then we're going to go stand still for a little bit, give them, whether it's 15 seconds or 10 minutes, you're going to give them their chance to potty. If they don't, then we're going to start walking. And we're going to walk from point A to point B. And we do not stop every 5 seconds to sniff pee mail. We just go, because we're on my walk. And when I say that we can stop again, then we'll stop, and I'll give them another opportunity to try.
Okay. Sorry, just that an ambulance passed by, so if you heard it, there's no urgency here.
It
just passed by. Those beautiful ambient noises.
There you go.
Okay, but again, back to the original thing. It's you that's really deciding the routine. You're not letting the puppy do what it wants to do. You're waiting for your puppy to go, and while your puppy is waiting, it's not playing.
Right. You want to discourage that. Because they will. They'll play for 15 minutes and then suddenly go, oh, that's right, I had to pee. And by then, maybe you're in a different spot that's no longer convenient.
Okay. Is it logical to assume that after they do their business and you give them all kinds of praise, that they can continue their walk? Are they going to learn that if they poo, the walk continues, and if they don't poo, they go back inside?
Well, again, I hate to control poo that much.
Right, right.
Poo is hard particularly to control.
Right, right.
And by the way, that's the one exception. If I'm walking from point A to point B,
yep,
and they suddenly show me that they have to defecate, then I will absolutely stop and allow that to happen. You can't stop poo either.
So, right.
So pee is the one that's easier, because once they've eliminated once, usually if they think they have to eliminate again in 3 seconds, it's because they're starting to mark their territory. And so they've, you know, they just put out a couple dribbles. It's not much. And so with pee is much easier to control.
And let's continue on the marking thing for just 2 seconds. We don't want to allow them to mark. Is that correct?
It's not necessary. It's not their place to mark. When every time they pee, they're marking. But if they get in the habit of, oh, I'm going to mark here, mark here, and mark here, just little dribbles everywhere, then it's more likely to happen in your house as well. And it shows that things are a bit out of balance. It's, you know, they should eliminate fully and be done. If they feel like they need to mark everywhere, they're starting to claim territory. And maybe something's a little out of balance because, again, it's all your territory.
Sorry to interrupt, just to play devil's advocate for 10 seconds. Isn't that what dogs do?
Of course.
Right.
Absolutely. And there's an element of dogs that we just, you know, dogs are dogs. They're animals. And but what happens is it becomes a habit. And then you find suddenly you're not getting from point A to point B in any expedient manner because they're stopping literally every blade of grass to mark it practically or to sniff somebody else's mark spot. And we need to have a more business-like attitude about our walks. In the beginning, allow you to sniff and soil at your heart's content. When I see that you legitimately either have done it or you don't need to, then we're on our walk because we got stuff to do. And we're not going to stop again until I say so. But then I'll give you another, you know, whether it's 15 seconds or 15 minutes, but I'm going to stand still, let you soil around me or sniff around me, do your thing, and then we're walking again.
Okay. And when they do produce something, lavish praise again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes I put the image in people's head. It's kind of like walking down the cereal aisle with a little child holding your hand. All those really great sugary cereals are at the bottom, and they're going, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one. And they're stopping you every 5 seconds. Well, you're never going to get your shopping done.
It's a great example. Those boxes are so appealing.
They are so appealing. And so mom has to take charge. Mom has to say, no. We're going to the end of the aisle, and we're going to get the cereal that I chose. Okay? And so you have to step up to the plate and be an adult. And the same thing with the dog. You got to step up to the plate and be a leader. I will allow you to stop here, but we're not stopping again until I say so.
Good to know. For those of us that, again, have just gotten new dogs, and you said you will allow your dog to poo when it needs to poo or wants to poo, can you give us some, I mean, I know the answer to this, but maybe some people don't. Can you give us some classic body language signs that a dog is going to give you that it needs to poo?
Typically, they'll start sniffing the ground. They might start circling a little bit. Okay, not everybody is identical, and some will circle for way longer than others. And then the general arcing of the body. It's pretty standard, and you're just gonna learn what your dog does. The toughest dogs are the little tiny ones that are low to the ground. When you're trying to see if, especially puppies, if they're peeing or not, sometimes they barely even change position, and you're totally, totally at a loss as to what they're doing. And they might be peeing, but it's not obvious. And so you've missed an opportunity to praise. So sometimes you kind of gotta arc your neck down a little bit and go, is that okay? Good, you're peeing. Good job, good job.
Yeah. Because again, at the end of the day, I mean, even though there'll be similarities, they are individuals and they're all going to have their, you know, little ritual of what they do before they got to go.
Oh, yeah. My one puppy, I have a new Pomeranian. And the first few weeks that he would soil, he would do a handstand. And that was just too funny.
A handstand.
In order to poo.
Oh, my God.
He was pushing so hard that his back feet came up off the ground. And that's when I knew he was pooing because when he was doing handstands.
Oh, my God. Too funny. Too funny.
It was.
On a totally personal note that I'll throw out there, I walk dogs at the SPCA occasionally, and I walked in Akita last night, and for the very first time I'd seen this, we have some really large snowbanks, but the dog actually got vertically and pooed vertically. I'd not seen this in 2.5 years, but I guess they're all different. He, like, you know, the snowbank was vertical, so he put his front paws against the snowbank, and he just let one loose. And
it's bizarre.
But again, it's just to illustrate the point that they are individuals, and even though there may be patterns, your dog may be special.
Yeah.
Okay.
And do you know why male dogs lift their legs?
The door is so wide open here for comments, but I'm not opening it. Please tell me the answer.
Okay. So male dogs want to be perceived as tall, as big dogs to incoming male dogs. So the higher they can arc it up a tree, the bigger they will appear to the next dog that comes along and sniffs the pee. It's like a bear marking the side of a tree with his nails. A dog lifts its legs so that he can mark as high as he can in order to look taller.
I'm not embarrassed to say I did not know that. Thank you. Thank you for that piece. Thank you for that piece of trivia. I'll use it one day on a board game of some kind.
Yeah, and I guess the more insecure dogs might arc it higher, you know? if I'm really secure about my masculinity, I don't care.
Interesting. No, but that's really interesting, actually. And I bet a lot of people are going to find that news to them as well.
Cool. We love that.
If we wanted them to go in a certain location, how do we get them to do that?
It's the same as everything. It's consistency. So we have clients that have trained their dogs to go in a specific maybe area where they've laid down just pebbles for them to go on so they're not ruining lawn, or they've laid down bark or something like that. And so you can just continually always take them to that one spot. Again, reward the heck out of them. It's the same principle applies. It's just that you're not making the entire yard their territory to soil. You're just saying, nope, you can only go in this one spot. And the beauty of that is then you can put down some sort of substrate that isn't going to get ruined or look nasty when it's got their leftovers on it. But you can also plant it with things like English ivy. And English ivy is not something you want your dog to chew on, but at the same time, it's a great plant that will cover the area where they're soiling regularly, and it is not as strongly affected by the nitrogen in their urine, like grass is. So you can make a nice little decorative area where they just are in the habit of going, and that just becomes their habit, just like we go to the bathroom. They have their specific bathroom spot.
And because they're such creatures of habit, you know, if you bring them to that area first and you know the time is approximately right, they're likely to go and continue their walk much more happily.
Yes. And two, it smells like them. It smells like, you know, they've gone there in the past. That, again, elicits the response to want to go. And they do. They get in the habit oftentimes of just going on a particular substrate. That's why some of the puppies, you know, when they've gone on a carpet too many times, that's, you got to take a little piece of carpet outside with you and teach them to go outside and then remove the carpet eventually. So that's why paper training, it's like they learn to go on the paper and you reduce the paper, reduce the paper, reduce the paper until they're just going on a little tiny piece of paper. But many dogs get in the habit of going just on a particular kind of material, whether it's grass or pebbles or carpet.
And once they're used to it, they're used to it. It becomes part of their routine.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can even be, they are such creatures of habit that it can even be to the point where if you have never put your dog on a leash and you only let them out in the backyard, but then suddenly you have them on a leash, they will not go when they're on the leash. The reverse is also true. If a dog has only ever been on a leash and suddenly you let them off leash, they sometimes won't go off leash. That's how much of a habit it is. And so we have to be structured. We have to have habits. And we just tend to be too distracted in life to create good structure for our dogs sometimes.
Got it. Before we end, I hate to even recommend this, but before we end, does it make sense that if it's completely secure of an area that maybe we want them to be off leash when they do it?
In the end, it doesn't matter. If they're used to going there, if I'm understanding you correctly, if they're used to going in that one spot, and maybe you taught it off leash or on leash in the beginning because you were there being the tree and you were telling them they needed to go in this one spot, then it should just become their habit off leash that's where they go. And you might have to encourage them a couple times, but it should be that's where you go. They go. We have our dogs, they go specifically over in the corner by the horse paddock. That's where they're allowed to go. It doesn't mean that if we were on a 2-mile hike, they wouldn't go someplace else. But when they're home, that's the corner they need to go in.
Okay, excellent, excellent. And one last thing that just occurred to me. What about people that take their dogs on vacation or take them around, you know, that are in many different areas at many different times? Are we counting on then the routine of when they're eating to help them to produce at the right time, at least, even though the place will be different?
Well, and two, because you've backed it up with a word. You've given it a word of association, let's go potty, or whatever it is you want to call it. And that's the word that produces the behavior. And if they, you know, feel safe doing it in front of you because you never flipped out on them too much, then it should all be very pleasant and very easy, and they should be able to soil anywhere.
Because they're learning, because you basically told them what to do, and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Which is, again, why the word association is also a very important part of this, obviously. It's not just the actual production of urine or feces. It's the association of the location, of the time, of the word that makes this all much easier.
Yeah, you You're guiding them. You're saying, okay, it's an okay time to do this now. Go for it. It's kind of like telling the kids, let's go potty before we get in the car for our long car trip, and they got to go and try.
They got to go and try because that's just what all living things do.
Yep.
Good to know. So thanks so much for all that great information, Elizabeth. I know it's going to demystify the phenomenon for a lot of people. And I hope we can have you on the show again in the near future.
Oh, we look forward to it. We love doing these. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Have a good day and say hi to Doug.
I will.
Bye for now. And so I'd like to thank Elizabeth one last time. Elizabeth and Doug run Tenderfoot Training, and they have their own site at tenderfoottraining.com. They have an excellent, excellent DVD off that site, and you can order it. And all the little tips and tricks that Elizabeth gives on our podcasts, it's all in one cohesive unit on her DVD, and it's highly recommended. If you're having any type of training problem whatsoever, or you just want to know how to build the proper relationship with your dog so that your dog will listen to you and want to listen to you, I highly recommend their DVD. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to get it automatically, the best way to do so is just go to our blog, pets.ca/blog, and click the subscribe in iTunes button or subscribe in any podcatcher of choice. I'm going to make myself a nice cup of tea to soothe my scratchy voice. And until the next podcast, please, please, please get down to your pet's level and give them lots of kisses and lots of hugs. And just before you're done, give them one extra scratching under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.